Welcome back to this Leader Speaks edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation on the intersection of government mission and technology. Over the past decade, while the private sector was consolidating data centers, the federal government increased its data centers from 432 to over 1,100, leading to redundant investment, reduced energy efficiency, and poor service delivery. With the FY11 budget, the Obama administration introduced a new initiative, a government-wide initiative to consolidate federal data centers, reducing their number and cost. Richard Spires, CIO at Homeland Security, outlines the benefits of data center consolidation and his efforts in realizing them.
I think that the benefits are manifold. Obviously, we talk a lot today about going green, and with the proliferation of data centers, DHS and our baseline inventory, we've actually located 41 data centers within DHS, okay, just as an example of that. So right there it says we should be looking to consolidate it from a power and energy saving standpoint, let alone all the other benefits that are more IT related, if you will, such as our ability to foster more efficiencies in how we run our operation on the IT side, the cost savings. Clearly, the security benefits that come with this, because we can get to one security architecture much more easily by having these all these systems consolidated at a much smaller number of data centers. Those are the benefits that that we certainly see by doing this. And that's one of the reasons, too, having done it at DHS, when they asked me to help at the federal level with this, I thought, sure, I mean, I can draw upon the lessons learned that we have in order to help hopefully other agencies and departments as they look at data center consolidation. I think there's huge potentials, as I mentioned, in cost efficiencies, but also in energy efficiencies, and then in some of these other more intangible things like fostering more efficiencies on how we share information and being in a more secure IT posture than we are today through this data center consolidation initiative.
Fostering secure platforms and realizing IT efficiencies are key to the success of data center consolidation. Dave Bowen at FAA explains.
We see significant benefits. We think there are going to be greater efficiencies, reduced operating costs, certainly better security, more standardization, greater opportunities for disaster recovery, and increased server utilization. For instance, we found in our networks, our servers were running in the order of 7 to 11%. You know, that if we can take that up, we get opportunities around better utilization, more efficiencies, better power consumption, and things like that. The challenges are mostly cultural. There are lots of server huggers out there, and reluctance to consolidate IT infrastructure across our lines of business. Most commercial companies have recognized this issue and dealt with it over the last several years. They went through a big consolidation effort, and it saved millions. And I think in the upcoming years, where we're going to be challenged in terms of budgets as a government agency, we need to do the best we can to save this money and at least be able to put those funds back into things that add more value to our mission.
Budget constraints demand cost-saving measures. Cloud computing has the potential to lower operating costs. Dr. David McClure, Associate Administrator at the U.S. General Services Administration, tells us more of the advantages of cloud computing in an era of tight IT budgets.
Cloud computing, you know, is the new fad. Some say it's nothing new. It's really old stuff repackaged. It is a different type of computing model in which you're really taking the power of the internet and the connectivity of the internet, and you're creating ability to store and process and compute information. And I'm doing it in a fashion that's very elastic. It's just like talking about the economy and what affects the job rate and the inflation rate. Cloud computing lies in the eyes of the beholder. But we are moving in this direction. In a general sense, cloud computing offers enormous economies of scale advantages for the government. It gets us out of several things. One is running huge infrastructure. We begin using the infrastructure of the internet to run a lot of our data storage and computational and distribution needs for information. And that's really what GSA's role is. It's to deliver operationally what we want to do in government. I'm trying to think about how we can actually move this into adoption and operationalize cloud computing. So we're behind the apps.gov storefront. We're playing the role of, again, facilitating and trying to get these things moving so that we can help agencies adopt them as quickly as possible.
Adopting this new approach is happening in different ways throughout the federal agencies. Here's Richard Spires on his efforts.
I alluded to earlier this idea of a private cloud, and that's been our main focus on these two data centers, is to set up a virtualized environment that we can then provide a base set of services to the components in order to provide their end-user capability. So in some instances, we're moving legacy applications in kind of as they exist. But in others, we're bringing in applications. I mean, email is a great example. We're bringing it in as a service offering now so that they don't have to worry about running an email system anymore. And we still have each component running their own email system. We'll run it as a virtualized service essentially for them. So you have that level of cloud offering. And then under that, we do then virtualize like the servers. We're looking at what does it make sense for DHS to buy from commercial service providers and their cloud offerings. And so we're trying to be smart about this.
Terrorist attacks, natural disasters, and large-scale criminal incidents too often are case studies for revealing weaknesses in our national information sharing capabilities. Van Hitch, CIO at the U.S. Department of Justice, tells us more about his efforts in this area.
This is something that's certainly been a major emphasis of mine for a long time. We have a program at the department called LAISP, Law Enforcement Information Sharing Program. We started that many, many years ago. I'm going to say 5 or 6 years ago from a planning stage. And we're still implementing, but we're well along in implementation. So we've actually implemented a lot of the capabilities. LAISP is really, in a broad sense, a commitment from the Department of Justice to share information broadly within the law enforcement area of the workforce, and meaning the state and locals, other federal agencies, as well as the intelligence agencies. LAISP focuses on the broad, unclassified area, because that's the area where we have to share broadly with state, local, and tribal law enforcement across the United States. So it's much more than an IT initiative. It's really deals with policy, it deals with culture change, and it deals with different ways of doing things. I think truly LAISP is and will change the way law enforcement's done in the United States. When we started building LAISP, we adopted something called NIEM, National Information Exchange Model. And that was adopted also by the Department of Homeland Security early in its beginnings. I worked with the CIO of the Department of Homeland Security to get them to adopt it. That has been extremely helpful in this objective of information sharing, because it is a standard for data exchange and XML standards for message exchange, like the Amber Alert. Is an example of how NIEM, of a NIEM standard message format. And what it does is facilitates, if we put the information in this format, which we do in all of our systems, we standardize it on Department of Justice, they standardize it in Department of Homeland Security, it makes our systems more accessible, more shareable. Health and Human Services is beginning to adapt NIEM. The state and local organizations across the United States are adapting NIEM. NIEM is a success story that started out in law enforcement and is very much important for our information sharing story, but it's got applicability way beyond across all government.
Innovation is also critical in how government leverages technology to meet its varied and complex missions. Dr. Bobby Braun, chief technologist at NASA, offers his perspective.
The pace of innovation and the pace of our communications and relationships are getting faster and faster. So I think to be a good leader today, what it's really all about is integrating. It's about taking knowledge from something you're doing over here on the right and learning something from that and applying it to a new problem, maybe over here on the left. It's about integrating knowledge from disparate fields and bringing that together in innovative ways. It's about new products and new markets for those products. The pace of innovation is so great that what we need are people that are thinking outside the box everywhere. We need them in the laboratory for their brilliant ideas and for their leadership in taking those brilliant ideas to market in a new way. What's needed are a few things. First, a clear focus on what's important. You know, why are we doing technology innovation? In my view, we're not doing it just to go play in the sandbox and see what kind of gadgets we can develop. We want to invest in technology at NASA because it will enable much grander missions in the future. It will enable us to explore with robotic precursors and ultimately with humans in space at a much faster scale and in a more sustainable manner. Secondly, we need a stability of purpose. And we need, frankly, a stability in the budget. We need consistency in our direction. That's the stability of purpose part. We can't be moving in a certain direction in technology this year and then have a dramatic shift next year. Because, frankly, the investments that we're making are long-term investments. They take a few years to come to fruition. And the only way we're going to get these disruptive and emergent technologies into our space program is through a portfolio approach where we make a wide variety of investments, high-risk investments, frankly. Some of them will grow into amazing technological solutions for our future. Some will not. And so the other thing that we need to be successful is we do need to have strong project management skill and expertise in nourishing and nurturing those investments that are flourishing and, frankly, cutting off and terminating those that are not. And that has proved to be a challenge. Both of those have proved to be a challenge in government programs in the past.
We will focus on the future when we return to Leaders Speak, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour.